Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Today's Saturday, September 19th, 2020. I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to The Night Owl. All right, so we are in month number two, or I'd say about maybe 3 or 4 months into our move. How do you like in Rogers Park?
Well, we've been here, what, probably pretty much officially since, I don't know, when we had to really move in here, that second week of August, third week of August.
I'm not counting the week that we accidentally just came here because our other place was inhabitable.
You're talking about the incessant beeping that we couldn't figure out that I eventually figured out was just our carbon monoxide detector when we thought all along
it's our smoke detector.
It's a smoke detector that won't stop and it's driving us crazy. And
it's okay. We were a week ahead of everything. We were a week ahead of moving in. We were a week ahead in getting our furniture. And our friend Jessie that was here, she said that she was surprised we had only been here a month from the setup that we had. We seemed pretty settled in. But I know we took a walk today, and I know the last episode we talked about the town of Rogers Park and, you know, just how memorable it is and how much history it has. And you had mentioned today that you had never seen one block where none of the houses look the same.
Especially the houses just don't look the same. I think there's a lot of opportunity here just to kind of do some research and do a few stories or episodes here about this neighborhood.
We stumbled onto a part of the lakeside today that we didn't even know existed. There's a lot of little
gems over here. It's interesting to see,
yeah,
where access to the lake is. I mean, yeah. Some of it's private, but there are some nooks and crannies and some public beaches here that you can, well, about beaches, but definitely areas you have access to. You can have access to the lake. Yeah.
I think we were just, I mean, I can't speak for you, but I would say I was a little bit ignorant as far as knowing where the beaches are. I know the south side has their beaches that are more populated and popular, and so does the north side and then downtown. But I think the north side is really beautiful because we can just go to these nooks and crannies. I mean, you could just reach out to the water. It's that close, and it's just unlike anything that I've experienced living by the lake and living that close to the lake. And obviously, Michigan is a giant lake, so it's not like we can't see it going in the same direction, but it's just really beautiful to see that. I actually don't think that I'd want to live right on the lake. Remember, we saw those buildings where they had the boarded up area because of the damage of storms and stuff. I don't know how much that rent is or how much their properties are, but that's expensive for that kind of risk. So hopefully they have some sort of
insurance. I can only imagine what the property tax is and what homeowners insurance would be that close.
Yeah, because I know that for our place, we can have renter's insurance, and because it's through a company and not a private-owned landlord, they actually do have benefits for that as well. I don't think we've looked into that, but I think Rogers Park so far has been, for me, a really pleasant experience. And I think I was telling Matthew today, I said, I don't think that we could ever really explore Rogers Park in a month. I think it will take us a while, which is nice. I think we can actually settle in and explore every day when we can and then report back to you guys. If you're not from Chicago, I know that we have some listeners that are from different states and we have a few from a different country, which is awesome. But if you guys want to hear more about our adventures and in our new neighborhood, we will definitely
bring it
back
to you. Like I said, it is the oldest neighborhood here in the city of Chicago. It has that feel. You can see that in the neighborhood, and it's reflective in the homes and the buildings that are around here and the park names that are here that kind of pay tribute to that history and that heritage of what was here.
Yeah, a lot of indigenous land.
I think, you know, it's pretty interesting, like you had got into kind of how this land came to be, and that originally this, I thought it was cool finding out, and I can't wait to dive a little bit more into it, but understanding, you know, some of the indigenous tribes that were here, that Rogers Park, reason why it kind of came to be, it was a crossing roads for Native American tribes. It was two distinct trails that met through here, and a lot of tribes would meet through here.
Yeah, do you know what tribes there were, or do you know a couple of them?
Well, like, one of the parks is Potawatomi, but you would have the Sauk and Fox tribes that also would have been through here. So I look forward to kind of deep diving into that. And
well, it's your turn to go first because I went first last time. So if you want to expand on some info that you have.
No, I just thought maybe it's just kind of something lighthearted or something a little bit easier to kind of get into. I was just curious because I don't know if I've done this with every neighborhood that I've lived in, is just kind of looked up that history of who was there. Matter of fact, I think probably the only neighborhood that I've ever really lived in and felt like, oh yeah, the history, to be honest, was the Austin neighborhood. And as I've told you in the past, and maybe even the listeners here living in Austin on that block, many of those people owning their own homes. You know, Austin neighborhood is where, when Barack Obama was seeking to get into the political game, he moved to Chicago for a reason. He opened up his law office on the west side in the Austin neighborhood. Many of those people not only met him, knew him, had pictures taken with him. It wasn't just a picture of him. It was with them and, you know, kind of all of that. You know, Brian always said he was impressed with me as a white man willing to kind of go and set up property there, yeah, or to live there, to be that minority. And yeah, I have come to realize, and maybe I've always realized this, that I prefer being in a very diverse neighborhood. I prefer looking at my own skin color and hoping that I am not the majority that lives in that neighborhood.
Like, I don't want to see people that look like me every day. No. I want to see different people. I think that for me, being inspired by nature, I think it's nice to be inspired by the human experience and seeing people in different garb and speaking different languages that I don't know. And when I was traveling to different countries, that was a given. I was going to be exposed to different culture. I was in their neighborhood. I was in their world. But it's nice to have that out your backyard.
And I thought along those lines of this 2020 theme here, where I'm hoping, you know, we keep pushing through and there is going to eventually be equality for all. But that's why I just love being in this neighborhood. You know, we talked about kind of where we neighborhoods that we had come from. But just to bring that to that point, like you said, you feel comfortable here. I have seen it with my own eyes. You know, you can say hello. You are a very extroverted person and outgoing, and you can say hello to anybody and genuinely mean it. Mm-hmm. And I think around here, you are going to get a genuine response of a hello and how are you doing. As I have taken my own walks, I have seen other interactions like that.
Isn't it beautiful?
And it's a white person walking past a black family.
I've seen strangers talk to each other.
It's a black woman walking past a white woman and her kid saying, hello, you guys looking every, hello, hello, hello.
Yeah,
whereas I think at times, you know, you felt like within Andersonville, not everybody always responded to a hello. And definitely sometimes you get the hard stares and the long looks.
Or just the ignoring. They don't even look at you.
Or just the ignorance of, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And then you could still, you know, 5 seconds later see an interaction with this person and somebody else going, oh, why are you interacting? You said hello to
they look comfortable with you.
They look like good for
you. I mean, how many times have we gone on walks where I pet someone's dog and I literally would just pet them for 20 minutes and the owner just didn't mind. They were just so enthralled with it. They were happy that their dog was having the best time. They weren't trying to rush away. They weren't trying to pull him away. They were just very, they happened today on our walk. I was petting, we pet this cute little poodle, shepherd mix. She was freaking the smartest little dog I've ever seen, the fluffiest little dog. And what the owner say? She was about 10 pounds. He's like, oh yeah, her fluff is what makes her, what makes up the weight. And he did not seem at all. Like, I felt like I was almost overstepping by just playing with her. It was just me and her. And he wasn't at all bothered by it. He was just having fun, and he was expanding on who she was. And it's just very nice to see people really want to know their neighbors. And I think it's healthy, and I think you feel more secure recognizing people's faces, even if they have a mask on. Sometimes you can kind of catch on to their style or where they walk, what their route is. People are predictable. I've seen the same people in the same area sometimes. You kind of start to learn that. So I feel like it's like Cheers. Like, everyone kind of knows who you are. even if they don't know your name, they know you. And yeah, like you said, it's very nice to be able to see that camaraderie and just acknowledgement of each other.
So I thought it's just kind of just to celebrate, I guess, maybe our arrival to this neighborhood and our being able to live here for now. I thought I would just start with, as a first part series, or hopefully going down the road and looking into more about this, is just who are some of the people that have lived in Rogers Park? You know, when you hear, oh, they're from Chicago, what does that mean?
It's
a very broad statement at times. But to be able to specifically know, hey, they lived in this neighborhood. I took a look at some of the list of people that have lived here, and I thought it was really cool. I don't know, maybe you'll think the same. Because I know we have a show coming up that we can't wait to discuss with all of you on currently, I believe it was airing on FX, but we saw it on Hulu, and that is Mrs. America, you know, starring what, Cate Blanchett and Sarah Paulson and Rose Byrne, which is a fabulous series.
Powerhouse women, by the way.
I would just strongly encourage you to go check that out. The actresses and actors in this are phenomenal, being able to really portray who they were. But it led me first to believe is Betty Ford, who was mentioned in that series, is from this area. Former First Lady, if you do not know who that is.
I hope our listeners do.
I think most of us know, if you grew up watching movies in the 90s and 2000s, you probably know who Laura Flynn Boyle is.
Yeah.
She's from Rogers Park. Childhood home was here.
I wonder if her house is still here.
I don't know. Maybe
we could find out. I know that they have a couple of tours, historical tours around here, too.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of
maybe
the
homes, have celebrity tours.
Matter of fact, one, like I said, getting into some of the homes here, there are a lot of Frank Lloyd Wright homes here.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily say it, so you got to do a little bit of research.
You can tell, too.
And that's where we'll kind of come in and help out with that, to point that out. But there are a lot of historic, really unique, cool-looking homes. It's got that vibe. So I mentioned her. You know, you had Olympic speed skater Shawnee Davis, which I can remember kind of from some of those Olympics.
Is that the 80s? Was it?
Yeah, he was in the 90s or 2000s there. Yeah. And then I know for me as a kid growing up, I was every Friday, I believe, on ABC. I think it was Friday.
You guys
maybe it was Saturday.
You guys watched it?
It was, no, it was, this is 2020.
Oh,
and
okay.
And that voice to me was Hugh Downs, who has recently passed away, but Hugh Downs, a heavyweight of a TV personality, he's from this area. He was from the Rogers Park area. Just to kind of continue on, if you're speaking 90s and 2000s and funny women, Tina Fey lived in Rogers Park.
So shout out to Tina.
Shout out to Tina.
We know we love her. She's another powerhouse. I mean, she had me at, you know, when she was on the first show and she was Lemon. I mean, that was great.
I mean, I knew she lived here in Chicago because I knew, you know, like she had gotten a start like a minute. I don't know if she's necessarily from here. I think actually from more Wisconsin, but she lived here because she got her start at Second City.
Yeah, and that's down over on North Avenue over there.
So I thought very, very cool. You had the actor that played the Lone Ranger, Clayton Moore. If you want to get nostalgic with TV here. Another actor, writer, near and dear to my heart. If you kind of like some real funny movies in the 80s, especially if you like Ghostbusters, one Harold Ramis. Love that. Love to see that. And then you have some other politicians and things that are from here. You have a couple of artists from here, some jazz musicians and some others that have really kind of put some of even streets and some of the landmarks in Rogers Park in their songs.
We've seen honorary streets too around here too. I wonder if that's named after anybody that came from here.
So I thought just to give us all a little bit of a taste there with some of the well-known people. Then there's some other more infamous that I think we're going to get into that I would like to kind of get into here. We will, as there's been some more infamous people from Rogers Park. We'll say a couple of serial killers are from this area. But I'm going to hold on to that and maybe get into that a little bit, including a more recent one, which they don't even have the name for, which is kind of ominous. We'll wait for that one.
I think it's interesting that they only have one street photographer. I think I should up my game. and get in there.
Go ahead and get in here. Yeah, I don't see why you can't.
I got plenty of time.
Plenty of time.
Yeah, there's so many murals and places to shoot. Oh,
the murals and the artwork through here are just, especially some of the murals in the underpass.
And they're in good condition. I mean, most of them are. Some of them you can tell have been here for a while. And I mean, there's one with the infamous, like, that kid, oh, I forgot the name of the character, but it's like the kid who has the steampunk goggles and like the a pilot's hat.
Well-known artist, yeah. Yeah. That's what I was trying to hold off on. I figured we'll get into.
Yeah, he ended up getting a park, and that's why they just stopped fixing that mural, because it's very, very
I figured
old.
We could get into especially talking about some of those murals, because it reminds me, I'm always a fan. I think we've had some of our artist friends on here, and you know, if it was up to me, I don't think there'd be any blank concrete ever in a city. It's open for artists, and the more art there is, it inspires it.
It's beautiful because some of them are in such good condition. Like, I mean, it's like nothing's touched it.
It's why I love like the Pilsen neighborhood or Little Village and some of those areas you've mentioned about before.
The Wicker Park has them, 606. There's a little, you know, there's a lot of that. There's Fulton Market has some cool murals, but that's more on buildings versus like here it is underpasses or overpasses. And then there is a friend showed us recently, I guess there's a Black Lives Matter memorial that was put up in July, and that's across from a post office. I think it's on Albion, but I'll actually find the link for it because
yeah, I think well we should do
really
a series
amazing.
On
yeah.
some of that those kind of the murals and then like you said that kind of memorial. That
yeah,
is a very,
I mean, that was really intense.
I would agree. It's a gut punch. It's an intense memorial as you just start to read the number of names
all the people
and
that have
all
passed,
the people
yeah.
that have passed.
And it's by the community. It was by the Rogers Park community or
yeah,
Chicago
set
community.
Set up by the Rogers Park
yeah.
community.
And it just made me think, like, I remember you saying there should be more of them. There should be more government-funded ones. There should be more bigger memorials everywhere. Like, how
we
have the cemeteries
talk about
for
this,
soldiers.
And maybe I think
and,
this would be a nice yeah. lead into what you have. But you mentioned, you know, we had Jessie who was here, and she talked about, you know, being an artist and remembering when – you know, you go back, it was, to be an artist was to be the A-list celebrity at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You had governments that would commission.
Yeah,
and
you're
if you
talking
were,
about Leo da Vinci.
Yeah, if you were a star artist, governments would commission you to work on these great
you
pieces.
You were the it person.
You
yeah.
were the it, and we put a lot of emphasis on
mm-hmm.
art, because they're really, you can't just be black and white, you
mm-hmm.
can't just be math and arithmetic and all that.
Art is math and arithmetic and
you
science.
You
got
to be able to have that.
yeah.
I think, you know, seeing, you know, there's another series on Netflix I can't wait to talk about a little bit about, and it's about the Challenger, but at least in those first couple episodes, you know, they mentioned how they were recruiting astronauts and how they realized, you know, it was important to have well-rounded, holistic human beings that weren't just...
They were everyday people,
you know,
that
just,
were here.
Yeah, I mean, they just
pioneers.
Weren't a slide rule and a calculator, that they were more than that, that they could, you know, play
educators
the saxophone or
mm-hmm.
again, write a book
mm-hmm.
or sing, and that they were
artists. They're humans. They're human. They have more to offer than just what we think that they are.
Well, and like, I think I've even, as we... look to the stars, maybe once again. It's been quite some time, but now here we are. It's going to be important to have those kind of people with that can describe and write and
report back. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's what we've had. I mean, if it wasn't for artists, I don't know if we would know as much as we know about the history of ourselves. Hieroglyphics.
Leo da Vinci knew about the solar system and the universe, and he also painted. He was more than just doing paintings. He allegedly, they say, figured out the flight, what flight was like, what it would be like to be a bird, what, you know, what the mechanics were to having wings or having a device that could make you fly. I mean, the Wright brothers probably took the credit and they probably figured it out, but sorry, our cat's running around if you can hear that. But like, I think that being an artist means that you aren't just creative, you're also willing to be curious and you're willing to learn. And that could mean science. It could mean math. Science and math is in nature. That universal DNA swirl is in everything. I mean, the infinity time is in everything. I mean, if you look at flowers, if you look at the solar system. I mean they're all the same. We are creatures
of emotion.
Yeah.
I mean, what we do, I mean, it's amazing because that's how our brain functions. Mm-hmm. I mean,
our brains are connected to the universe. It's the same thing.
And our brain is connected to, again, we emotionally, before we think, it's our brain passes. It's got to make that emotional connection. Sometimes our choices and things we make are probably too emotionally based. But that's who we are. And to be able to be an artist and to create a piece and to cause that kind of that initial gut response, genuine response from somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's powerful stuff.
And they have to know what details go into certain things that they're painting or that they're documenting. Like when we watch movies, you were watching a movie today that I've seen already, and just the detail, knowing how things work, how things move, knowing math, knowing angles, knowing motion. I mean, if you're going to paint a scene, you're going to make sure that it looks exactly like the scene. You're going to know that the sun rises this way. This is how the light looks on the trees. This is how the water is, the tides. I mean, everything. You can make up a scene yourself, but I think as an artist, especially like Leo Da Vinci, not DiCaprio, you have to know how things work in order to create that world for people to look at and be like, wow, I can't believe he got the light just right on that tree. That's exactly what it looks like.
Or just sometimes not even to that degree. It's just mm-hmm. their interpretation mm-hmm. of what that looks like.
That and too.
Do you see that as well? Yeah. Or what is your own emotions and thoughts? There we were with Jesse, and you had brought up, and one thing that I think kind of came out of a recent conversation was you had brought up in childhood having an American Girl doll.
Yeah, and right? Actually, I'm going to see my family tomorrow, and it reminded me of the last interaction I had with my aunt. I had said in previous episode, I think I even told Jesse from when we had our podcast, that I cut their hair, I think earlier, for my grandma's birthday. And my aunt was my guardian for a long time. She really helped support me financially and emotionally. And she really helped me with my identity. And she was mentioning to me, you know, we still have your American Girl doll. We don't know what you want to do with it. I suggest you keep it. I think it's a really good idea just to have it, even if you don't plan on having any children to pass it down to. I just think it's part of your life and your childhood. And talking to Jesse about it, I think it was because we were talking about our childhood and the things that we remember. And I remember having a certain doll, and my cousin had a doll, and that was something that she and I could do together. We could play together with our dolls. And they're not cheap. They weren't cheap then. They're not cheap now. They might be more expensive now. And now there's a whole store dedicated to this company. And it's really become a big company. And I think that I just wanted to kind of talk about it today because I thought it was interesting. And, you know, as I get older, I think about childhood memories. And that doll was a really great, I wouldn't even call her a toy. I mean, it was a companion. It was something that I could experience. And American Girl is an experience. It's not a doll. It's not Barbie where you just play with her. It's a friend, and, you know, it's geared towards 8 to 12 year olds. So I'm going to go ahead and talk about the invention of it and how it started. American Girl is an American line of 18-inch dolls released in 1996 by Pleasant Rowand, and she started her own company. So the dolls are made to portray 8 to 12 year old girls of a variety of ethnicities, time periods of origins, face, and social classes. They are sold with accompanying books told from the viewpoint of the girls originally. So the stories are basically focused on the various periods of American history. That's what they were before. But then they were expanded in 1995 to include characters and stories from contemporary life. Aside from original American Girl dolls, the buyer also has the option to purchase dolls that look like them. So that's the Truly Me series. I think that was about 2000, I'd say. That was when
So they didn't start out, right, with the ability to have a doll that kind of
No, they were just you. Original OGs. Like, they had a storyline. They had books that came with them. They were about maybe 10 books, a series of books, from the viewpoint of that girl. And the dolls range from 8 to 12 years old, which was great because it was for girls of the same age. And the Truly Me series came out when Build-A-Bear came out. Because Build-A-Bear came out when I lived in Schaumburg. They came out and they were like in Woodfield Mall. I think I was already like a teenager when they came out. But Truly Me came out, which was really great because I think people were like, oh, well, my kid's black or my kid's Indian or my kid's Native American or Mexican or whatever. And they don't look like them. And there's nothing there for them to have that looks like them. And I think the 2000s was a chance for girls to realize, okay, not everyone looks like a blonde with blue eyes. People look different. So Truly Me was made to gear towards girls of different color and backgrounds. And they were able to have a companion that looked like them. And I think that's beautiful because Barbie wasn't even doing that back then.
And we've talked about this before. It's important that kids see
that other that's beautiful. People.
They see, well, especially for a child, that they can see somebody that resembles
girl.
Them. Yeah. That looks like them. We've talked about this, whether mm-hmm. it's a child with maybe, you know, some kind of handicap or whatnot.
Or they have like a birthmark or, if,
or
you
just
know.
Whatever that they yeah. look like. They realize I don't look like all of a sudden everybody like me, mm-hmm. but if I can see, oh, yeah, that's Dora. Oh, there's somebody that looks like me.
Or maybe kids that don't have a lot of friends. Maybe that's something, like I told you, for me, I was the only child. I had cousins. I didn't have a lot of friends. So that was, for me, a comfort. It was like, okay, I picked Addie because Addie was, you know, black. But obviously me being multiracial, I think I was too old by the time they came out with Truly Me. I was like a teenager. So I should have gotten one just to have. But if I was younger during the 2000s, I probably would have, that would have worked for me. I would have been able to find a girl that could be multiracial or look like me. I think that that's great for girls now to be able to have that because Barbie, Mattel didn't even do that with their Barbies. They didn't do progressive sizes and clothing styles until the late 2000s because they had a new CEO. And she was just like, well, we're going to do body positive Barbie. So American Girl dolls, the characters were initially the main focus of Pleasant Roland during the late 90s and 80s. Pleasant Roland came up with the idea after she returned from a trip to the Colonial Williamsburg, where she noticed that there was a significant void in the toy market for younger aged dolls and saw an opportunity to provide an alternative to baby and adult dolls. So there wasn't anything for preteens. There was just baby dolls, which is creepy to me. I don't think girls should play with baby dolls. Just further pushes you into motherhood. It's like, it's weird when you see a child with a baby doll and they're pushing him in a stroller. Because I'm like, you're not a mom. Like, why are you playing with a baby? I never had baby dolls.
I'm a little mom.
Or they play with Barbies, or like old rag dolls or something, or China dolls, which you couldn't play with those. They were just for looking at. Although the book series were written for girls who were at least 8 years old, the endeavor to cover significant topics, now listen to this, such as child labor, child abuse, poverty, racism, slavery, animal abuse, and war in manners appropriate for understanding and sensibilities of their young audience. So she made sure, and I've read those books, she made it so these 8 to 12-year-olds could understand this shit. They could understand war and poverty and child, I mean, they're 8 to 12-year-olds. And they made it so that they could understand it and it wasn't traumatizing for them to read. Like, that's really creative in your invention and your knowledge. Okay, I'm not doing this for greed and I'm not doing it to make money. I'm doing it because I want these girls to have an educational book series that will go with these dolls.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just, like I say, that was probably one of the things right lacking with Barbie is Barbie was just
the dollars.
This has, you know, historical reference. This is educating you. This is teaching. Well, mostly probably young girls that buy these.
Big, huge topics that even adults can't understand and still fight about. I learned about that stuff early because living with my grandparents, my grandpa would watch hours and hours of documentaries. So I would just sit with him and watch documentaries about things that maybe only adults would understand. But for her to be able to go into that creative way of telling these kids what really happened in these historical settings and not leaving anything out. And I actually didn't write it down, but I noticed too that she was very big on talking about what really happened in historical events. She wasn't like telling people about what we would learn in school, where we just learn snippets of certain things or things that our schools want us to know. She would include things that weren't in the books, that were just, that were history facts, that were just, you know, that were thrown to the wind or were tucked under the rug, especially with Native Americans and Black history. And she was very, very big on telling the truth. I read some reviews, old reviews about these books, and some people were very upset because they said that they were too progressive. They were too out there. They thought that kids shouldn't be learning that. And I think 8 to 12 year olds should know. 8 to 12 year olds already know most things. They know how to read people. They're going to tell you what they think. And I think they should know what's really going on. That's why we say that the younger generation now, the 18 and 21 year olds, they know shit. They grew up with the internet. These girls didn't have that when we were 8 to 12. Even when I was a teenager, we didn't have that. So knowing that through books that aren't boring, history books, was great. And then you can play with a doll while you're at it. So the dolls came with accessories that were very authentic to the times that they were from. I think they came with an original set. So you'd have like an original, like the story, I think the book stories, the storybooks would be a series. So when you buy the doll, I think it's for like the first book. And then you have to buy accessories. And I think you just bought it through the catalog. Like whatever. That was back when we were using catalogs.
Catalogs. Yeah. You better remember catalogs.
We were going online. And I think there was like a store. But I don't think they were everywhere like they are now. But you would get a certain, you know, the specific outfit for that one chapter or that one book with accessories. And they were all very authentic to what that time was. And I had Addie. So she did come with a few things, and then I remember ordering a few other things, and I think I only had about maybe 4 or 5 books, but I mean, I had a blast reading it, and obviously I already knew a lot about slavery, and I knew about her time period, but it was just nice to have the reminder of how lucky I was, like being safe and being in a family that took care of me, and knowing, you know, that I could be worse off. I could have been, I mean, just knowing that I was there because of my ancestors. I was living comfortably because of them, because of both sides of my family, like, actually caring, giving a shit about us and, like, going through a lot of struggles. I mean, you and I can't compare any of our struggles to our ancestors. We're here because of them, right? So these dolls kind of represent our ancestors.
When you think about how or why we're even here, think about the number of people that lived before you that allowed that is within your bloodline.
And they never remind you.
That you came here. I mean, think about the struggles and the sacrifices that they had to do to all of a sudden now, here you are, here I am.
I mean, listeners, you have to realize that. And even if your family makes you feel bad about it, They're not intent. That's not their intention. Their intention is to say, wake the hell up. You're here. Your ancestors that aren't with us, they're everywhere. And the trauma that we are dealing with right now is the shit that they dealt with. And it shouldn't be happening anymore. We should not be in another civil war. In my opinion, we are in one. Politically, socially, emotionally, psychologically. I've said this time and time again. I avoid going on Facebook that much. I've now just settled on going back to posting positive things. I posted positive things before, but I know that there are touchy topics that people don't want to talk about. And I'd rather just talk to somebody in person about it than just typing behind a screen. I feel like I could hear their tonage. I can see their face. And it's kind of pointless to me to do that online. We shouldn't be going through this right now because they've gone through it, and we should be having flying cars. Elon Musk, I am so disappointed in you.
Well, that was the
we
thing,
should have
too.
Fly cars
recently,
by now.
You know, I only watched maybe up until right about halfway, maybe 3/4 of the way through that second episode of the series about the Challenger. But it took me back because I remember growing up, and this would have been before you were born, but in the early 80s, and I realized this is probably as a child at that time where I came up with the genesis of the idea. You know, I mentioned before, right? Love Star Wars, but it was fantasy. It was a cowboy. It was an opera. It was a fantasy. Star Trek was something that I could watch and say, that's us. This is planet Earth. These are human beings. Look at what they did. They beat all odds. They beat poverty. We got peace. We're no longer. We got equality. And instead, we got up off that rock and look at what we did. Well, I look back and at that series, I see in the 80s how many times we sent a shuttle up into orbit. How many, man, we did it so many times that it went from the front page of every newspaper in America to a little paragraph somewhere in the third, fourth, fifth page of most newspapers, especially in the early 80s when it was our 10th, 12th, however many times we were going up into space. I mean, once the Columbia, the very first space shuttle that was able to go up and come back down, I mean, we brought a spaceship up and back down and landed it, and you realize it's all this hope been going on.
It came from everybody. Everyone was on their side. Everyone was united. They all wanted it to work.
Well, that's one reason it's why beautiful. They did it. It was a big kind of also a propaganda for the U.S., right? We want to be able to, hey, we're number one.
Well, that's what it became.
The one thing about the space program that they did realize is prior to the Columbia, they took a look at all their astronauts and they said, a bunch of white male men. We need to change things. Otherwise, the United States people are not going to get behind NASA and space.
No.
So they diversified it. They reached out. They got women. They got men of color. They got other races and ethnicities involved with the space program. And I think that's where really as a kid growing up in those early 80s and kind of looking at with Star Trek and all that going, yeah, we're going to get up off this rock. This is what we should be doing. We should to advance to the stars. And
what happened?
I can't remember the last time we spent an actual, well, I guess recently now, right? SpaceX and some of that. But
it's got to be privately owned now. It's got to be private.
That's where
companies.
It went, right? No longer NASA.
It's
got
to be like Interstellar, where there's just some mad scientist that figured it out.
That's
and like,
what it feels like.
And I thought Elon
now.
Musk was him, but I guess he's just good at making
Instead
cars.
Of coming together, beating this because one of the interesting things I think it was in that first episode is they show Ronald Reagan at the time who was the president of the United States and he's like, the United States, this is the most united we have ever been, and maybe he was right at that time. Maybe we were, although you have to understand, right, early 80s we weren't great.
We
had a lot of issues that we weren't really willing to look at. But it felt like the start of it, right? We were going to eventually beat it. We were going to come together, and we were going to become the human race. And the human race was going to get together, and we were going to start exploring up off this rock. Whereas I just feel like now, a lot of us are just very content with here.
And I don't know if it was the same speech, or the same president, but I remember a president talking about that. What would happen if there was an alien invasion? Would we all unite? I mean, would it take something like that for us to really unite together as a human race? And even if that happened, I don't think we should be enemies to aliens. I think that's still small-minded thinking, but it's still like, okay, does it have to take something extreme like that for us to unite? I thought the pandemic would do that for everybody.
This land is our land, your land, property owning.
It's just land.
It's just land. No one, your name isn't scorched into the earth all the way through to say that this is your, eventually you die and move on. Maybe you give it to your family, but guess what? Then they die and move on.
Everyone leaves this earth somehow.
Yeah, everybody leaves eventually here. And it feels like We
missed the mark.
Not to miss that pun, but we missed the boat.
We missed the boat.
We missed the boat.
I think the Mayans left a long time ago. They knew. They figured it out. You know, you couldn't even, in Machu Picchu, you couldn't even slide a credit card through those rocks. They were built like.
We stopped looking to the stars for the answers.
Yeah, and nature.
And we just said, you know what? We're going to own this land and be greedy.
Just nature in general.
A few of us are going to be powerful and we're going to put everybody else down.
Yeah, we went to the indigenous and said, you know what? You're not using this. We don't get it. Instead of now the healers and the artists are saying, hey, these plants are medicinal. These plants are good for you. The sun is good for you. The planets are aligned for you. We are all connected with that. There are people that I've talked to that don't credit astrology at all. But it really does. I mean, if you look into astronomy and astrology, they have very similar meanings. They have very similar.
We are made up of some of the same particles. We're made up of carbon. The stars.
Yes. I mean, our brain is literally powers like the universe, which is why the internet is somewhat like our brain. It's like our the universe. I think for me, like, I definitely think that all of that comes together. And I mean, hopefully you and I, maybe we'll be crusty old people, but hopefully it happens in our lifetime that we can see some difference. Even if it's a small change, we can see something, because I just think, we missed the boat. We're still treading water.
Yeah. Well,
and
like
we have 10 years left before the world starts to explode.
We're on the third rock from the sun, and I guess this is where we'll be.
So I wanted to talk to you about the historical characters, some of these dolls. There's a lot of dolls, but I think the ones that I picked would really stand out. And there's only five of them that are like the original. I would call them OGs. They were like out first. But I'll go in the order of what I thought was interesting for these dolls. Kaya Atanmi, she's Native American. So she was representing Native American in a region prior to a larger Eurocentric settlement. So that was her becoming and assimilating into Euro culture with the colonization, when they were like, oh, you're brown and you're dark skinned, we're going to take you away from your family and make you white and learn like we do because you're stupid. That's basically what she was around. So imagine as an 8 to 12 year old learning about this character that's becoming like assimilating and having to be part of
this. Oh, isn't that what's scary about us, is that we are just always
they're
about
kidnapping
assimilating.
Children. They
we're
are
always
kidnapping
about conquering
children.
And assimilating. You'll become one of us.
Yes, instead of just letting them be them. Felicity Merriman, she was one of the first OGs. She was repping colonial America and the dawn of the Revolutionary War. So she might have actually met Kaya. Who knows? They might have been around during the same time, because she was during that colonization. Carolyn Abbott, she was repping the war of the 1812. 1812 was a very big historical war that I think my history teacher had bashed into our heads every week. He was just wanting to make sure we knew about that war specifically. And let's see, Josefina Montoya. I love that they all have last names because it really gives them more character. She was repping the Southwest America under the Mexican rule.
Texas and the Alamo.
The Alamo, okay. I was going to mention that. I didn't
prior
know that was the
to
Alamo.
Moving west beyond the Mississippi River, you had the Louisiana Purchase, where we got land from Spain. Remember, Spain still owned and had parts of Mexico along with a few others, and eventually the United States would go to war.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to say the Alamo, but I wasn't sure if I was right.
Well, the Alamo was more for
but that
for
was
Texas,
for Texas,
because Texas
yeah.
was kind of, they were going to be their own independent.
We did see a movie for that. Remember that movie? It was like
DocuSucker.
DocuSucker, yeah.
Yeah.
That was kind of during that time, right? That
yeah,
was a
no,
really
that
good
takes
movie.
Place. Involving an Irish immigrant who's come over.
Were
and
there
he
Asian
kind of,
actors in there?
No, they would have been
Hispanic. Oh, they were
Hispanic.
Okay.
And yeah, because they were, you know,
I was thinking about The Good, Bad, and the Ugly or something.
Just that's what it dealt with, right? You had this Irish immigrant coming over, and he's, you know, trying to escape some things, and he's really good with explosives. No surprise there, right?
Cecile Ray and Mary Grace Gardner. So these were the only two dolls that came together. There weren't any other paired dolls in the history of American Girl dolls. I think now that I went to the store, the American Girl doll store, there have been some that you could get in the Truly Me. You can get like more than one. But these are the only two that came together. They represented New Orleans in the antebellum period and during the 1853 yellow fever pandemic. So we know about Lady A. That's why they got to change their name, right?
Remember that, because we still want that South to rise again.
So Kirsten Larson, she was another original. She was representing mid-century settlement of the American West by European immigrants and pioneers. So that's something that you really like, because your Red Dead show, your Red Dead video game, right? You probably would have seen someone like Kirsten. She was kind of that person, right? European immigrants?
No, because
you've never had
the
European immigrants in your game?
That's the thing with that the game that you're referencing there, the Red Dead game.
Is it after?
It takes place during kind of
the
third and fourth industrial revolutions.
Okay, so
yeah, you're probably talking what, mid 19th century there.
Okay.
They're talking 1840s, 1850s, as you know, people.
So it
would have
been before Red Dead.
Yeah, before.
Okay. And then Addie Walker, she was another OG. She was one I had. She was repping the tail end of the Civil War era and early Reconstruction era. So that was when slaves were...
That's when my game takes place, is after that.
Okay, so that was why you were going through those towns where it was just all black communities.
Yes, and they were the historical context and the accuracy that this video game that we're referencing has in it is, I think it's actually amazing.
Like when I watched Anne of Green Gables, they had like a black town and that was like the least, that was like the docks or the boons or whatever. The boons are what they call the boons. And like this was in Canada. I think that was where that show Anne of Green Gables was. But they had like a black town and theirs was like a little bit more ghetto and like a little bit more, you know. And then you had the white colonial people and I don't know if Canada was the same as America during that time.
Canada, well, because of a series that I've quite gotten mentioned yet, I don't think I've quite gotten all the way through it, but Canada dealt with a lot of their own, I mean, here in the United States, the way that we enslaved people from Africa, the Canadians enslaved the indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
And killed thousands and thousands of Native Americans in their own quest to take over and colonize Canada.
Yeah, because in Europe, they're European.
Yeah, I mean, they wiped out 2/3 of the population.
No.
I mean, we weren't any better, so, you know, we're...
White people.
Assimilation. I mean, it's going back to that Star Trek reference, right? The cyborg. What do they want to do? They want to assimilate everybody and make everybody like them. But yeah, it's kind of our thing.
I think I'll do some more research for the listeners and find an episode. Maybe I'll talk about maybe where that whole thing started. I need to know the psychology behind that. It seemed to have happened everywhere that there were white communities. And I know Portugal has done it too. Obviously, Portugal is a little bit more diverse and Spaniards have done it too. But
they were sailors.
Yeah.
And they were some of the first slavers and some of the first pirates.
Yeah, they were probably already shitty.
They were already sailing and doing those things.
And then there's the Vikings. I mean, they killed everybody. They didn't leave anyone. Yeah, at least they were they were picking and choosing. Then there's Samantha Parkington. So she's the last original. She was representing the turn of the century, America, and progressive era. So post-Victorian. So like tea and crumpets, poised. You have a coming out party. You're always dressed up for a specific occasion. And you say, yes, sir, no, ma'am. You're a proper girl. That's what she was. And her character was great because she was always outspoken. So there would be times where I could relate to her because I would just say the inappropriate things that weren't supposed to be said. She didn't know how to read a room, but she didn't care. She was like, I don't like this. This is boring. I don't want tea and crumpets. I want to go out and do some fun things. She stood out to me. Rebecca Rubin, early 20th century immigration to America from Eastern Europe and events leading to World War One.
World War One was still, again, it was the French Germans.
Yeah, French and Germans.
We did get involved there, I mean.
Yeah. Kit Kittredge, American Great Depression. She was repping that.
So that's the 30s. We'll talk about that.
Nana Mitchell, World War II, first entry into the war. She was Pearl Harbor. She was the one who experienced learning about Pearl Harbor. That was like when she was around. Molly McIntyre, the tail end of World War II. So they probably would have known each other, but I don't think they lived in the same state.
Well, I thought it was interesting kind of looking up Molly's stuff, right? She takes place in the 50s,
60s. 57,
you know, we've seen some shows about the Midwife show and a couple others that take place in England. Set in England in the 50s and the 60s, and you just get a reminder just,
they have
been devastated by World War II.
Yeah.
And they were trying to come and rebuild back and trying to...
I mean, no more rationing, no more, like, you lose a lot of people, people died. I mean, you lose your home or you lose your job or you lose your kid. I mean, who knows? You have kids that have to go to war. And, Melody Ellison, African-American Civil Rights Movement of the 1950s. So she was a real person and she was around with what's going on now. So that was Civil Rights Movement of the 1950s. Julie Albright, the upheaval and changes of American society during the mid-70s. So that was when she was around.
So I can't wait because she'll fit right in.
That was Mrs. America.
That's our Mrs. America.
I just thought about it too.
Yeah.
And then the last one I thought was great was Courtney Moore. She was the feminist and tech changes in American society in the mid-80s. So that would have been after Mrs.
America. That would have been that push going back to NASA.
Yeah.
And
she would have been the result of
women
that.
Women and saying, come on.
That would have been the result saying, hey, you're smart. come get a job that's not a secretary. How they treated secretaries back then.
Well, even in my little brief with the Challenger, one of the female astronauts, they said introduced, and they showed her to her room, and it had, like, pink satin sheets and stuff, and she gagged me. She was appalled by it and said, no, that's...
And we have to talk about passing of Ruth Bader.
And unfortunately, you know, as we've mentioned...
We can't go without ending without saying, talking
about
that.
I don't think we can end without mentioning that. We have lost already some heavy, heavy hitters this year. Mm-hmm. We lost Robert Lewis, and now RBG has unfortunately passed away. And, of course, this
She fought, man. She sent a lot.
All kinds of, I would say, to me, it felt like it sent all kinds of ripples. But in this strange time period, right, just as tells you, just like even with my own family, I can tell we are just all over the board with how we feel about the events of all of 2020. And that is one of them. Again, my family, the four of us, you know, mom, dad, sister, we all sit at varying levels where I would say, especially with the passing of Mrs. Ginsburg here, my mom and I are on the same boat.
Your mom and you are almost always on the same boat.
We feel, one, it's very devastating. Two, it's we feel now that there is going to be a fight, right? We cannot afford to get another very conservative person on the Supreme Court for fear of overturning past decisions like Roe v. Wade. You know, I think my dad probably feels, you know, that's not bad too, but you know, whatever.
We just don't want people like Brett Kavanaugh alive.
We don't
need
somebody like old Kavanaugh on there screaming and crying about his beer.
Whereas, beer.
You know, I talked to my sister earlier today about it, and she was very adamant. And she is one of these people. When I saw comments like, "Well, she should have stepped down earlier. She should have stepped down earlier, and should not have been so
do you think she
hard-headed.
Should? I mean, she's going to do what she wants to do. No one's going to tell her what to do.
I have a hard time trying to come up with a thought on that other than it just, to me, it feels like Supreme Court justices should not be appointed for
life. What do you think, going through Ruth's eyes, her thoughts, why do you think she stayed on? What do you think from her point of view would be the reason?
I don't know because I'm not somebody who was that, who has been that old. She was probably at that age and still felt like, I can still do this. Although, remember, she... still had a lot of health issues even at that time. That was one reason why there were suggestions for her to step down and allow then-President Obama to pick somebody to replace her.
He would have done a good job picking
she
someone.
Did not. You had another justice step down. You saw Obama spend a year trying to get Merrick Garland in. Mitch McConnell and his cronies of yuckiness fought and blocked that, which then allowed this current.
I think she thinks that there might have been just things that she needed that needed to be done, and I think she didn't think that it was we were done with. I think there was. She thinks that maybe there was a lot to still fight for, and now our LGBTQI rights are in danger. Our women's rights are in danger. There's a lot
equal
of stuff.
Equal rights. Everything
that
is now back on the table. I think
that's
is
what
it,
I'm
although
saying.
There is, in some ways, there is a glimmer of hope because when you look at already what this current set of judges have done, they have upheld some of that. Matter of fact, to some of my disbelief, and I think probably to this current president's belief why he put some of the, he's like, oh, you mean you're not going to overturn it? Well, they haven't. They have actually upheld some of these. So I guess I do hold out a glimmer of hope.
Well, it's good to have faith. It's just that it's still terrifying.
They are going to rise above it and understand it. It's I feel like at times these are dark times and always looking for those that glimmer of hope and that light out there at the end.
I want to actually add one more thing. I did add on my Facebook about how people feel about Trump. Why they would vote for him, why they did vote for him in the beginning, and if they still feel the same. And I mentioned that I would not comment or respond. I just wanted to see what people were going to say. And I also said, if you're brave enough, comment below, tell me what you think or why you decided to vote for him or represent him. What do you specifically like about him, or what do you think he's done to make a difference? And I cannot wait. I'm going to let it sit for a little while on my status.
Okay, because I can tell you, I have heard from a couple different news sources where they have done interviews with people that back in 2016 mm-hmm. voted for him.
And what they said.
And what they said and why now they're either going to A, vote for him again, or B, why they were not.
Yeah.
Voting. And these were, most of these, what I'm talking about, were Republicans.
Yeah. And I did put it on, well, I put it on my personal profile. I didn't put it on the Night Owls, but I'll let that sit for a little while until the next time we record and I can come back with some responses, because what I've always noticed is that someone will post a meme or an article. Sometimes it's a fucking stupid article from a fake ass news station or just a really small, like, art, you know, news station. And then it's just very vague or, like, you know, not specific to what they're talking about, and then there's just this whole argument, and I'd rather just ask the question so that people can outright say, this is how I feel, and for me not coming, I'm not going to give them any judgment or any opinion. I'm literally just going to be a voyeur and just watch the comments roll in and see what people say. I do like stepping back and seeing my friends, like, come into the defense and just seeing how their interactions are with people that I trust and I love and I've met and I hung out with. Talk to people, because I know that there are people on my friends list that I know I've actually friended because they are different than me. They have different views just because I want to see what they post. It's not like, oh, I'm trolling them or anything, but it's, you know.
No, it's what makes this country great.
You can have a healthy debate.
Human beings
it's
great,
good to
that
have
we
healthy
can
debates.
Have differing opinions and
yeah.
ideas.
I just
want to
make sure
together.
That specific. I want to know the specifics. I want to know, not because, oh, he's amazing. Don't use his vocabulary. Really talk in depth of why you like this.
It'd be interesting to see how many people can really get in depth, because the comments that I hear typically, and
they're
I'll be
so
curious
mean.
To see that if you'll see some of these, is the reason why we're going to vote for him again is I still have my job. I haven't gotten sick. He's done a great job through the pandemic. Let's go another 4 years. That is a common statement I hear from those that are going to vote for him again.
When you and I have said that if there was any other president, it probably would have been different or better. I mean, it's not like
we don't know.
It's not
like
he did something that no one else could do as a president, as a leader.
But as we stated before, really, he would easily have locked up another 4 years if all he had to do was follow health officials' guidelines.
If not anything else, man, you could have just done that.
Yeah.
If not anything else. That would have saved you.
He just
you.
Could have sat back and said, okay, CDC, you're the expert.
You're in charge, yeah.
We'll do what you say to do.
If anything else, dude, that would have saved. I'm not even on his side, but that's something that's so obvious that he could have done. I think that it's almost like people that say that are like people that say, oh, well, I raised a child and I'm a mom. I gave them food and water. Like, great. That's what you're supposed to do when you're a parent.
As soon as he did that, out the window. No, you think about the two major events here. If he had done that.
Oh, it would have been okay. It would have been better. And there wouldn't be any anti-maskers.
You know how much I feel and how much, but that one silly comment where that slipped out that maybe he asked somebody about maybe putting his face up on Mount Rushmore. It really wouldn't have been that far-fetched if he had led us through 2020 with flying colors, got through the pandemic.
Yeah.
He got us through these racial tensions and led us to better, greener pastures of more equality.
It would have been fine. It would have been fine.
It would have been amazing.
And, like, he could have gone to the right people, the right sources, the right people that could have helped him along the way. He's a president. He has resources, dude. You have the best resources there are. Use them. Like, it's not.
But when you are a narcissistic sociopath.
He thinks he's right. He thinks he can do everything.
You can't do that.
And I think that, like, you know, you really have to realize that. I think there also wouldn't be a big divide with anti-maskers and people doing
that. Oh, we mentioned
all
that. None of that would be there. None of that would be there. Not as much. It's still,
not as much. I mean, there was like that in 1912.
And there still would be now because you look at it's not only here in the U.S.
There's still people that think they don't want to do it.
I mean, you still see protests for, I'm not going to wear a mask. Well, it's not just here.
And guess what? They all get COVID like a week later.
And now what you're finding is super spreader events.
Yeah. Or they're like, oh, you have to get educated. It's on your clothes too. And it's like, well, if it's on your clothes, why the fuck are you outside then, Karen? Go back home and stay inside. Like,
now, I can
what
get
are you
into
talking about?
Some of that because part of what I do for, now we'll want to end it here, but maybe next time I can get in and tell you how long it survives on surfaces.
That
it survives.
I know all that, but you could tell the listeners for sure.
And corrugated. And I don't want to just say it without pulling up and giving you
the specifics. Of course, we need context.
Specifics.
Yeah.
But there are surfaces that it does survive on, and clothing and other. Yeah, we can talk about that.
We're excited, you guys. Time. We haven't recorded in a few days, so we're excited. We want to talk about everything on this podcast right now. We wanted to end today with telling you guys we love you. We are so grateful that you are listening to us, and we are just really happy to be able to learn and grow with you guys. I'm Megan.
I'm Matt.
And you're listening to
The Night Owl.